Hello there, Podcast Land. This episode of the Behind the Barricade podcast is sponsored by Podcast Texts. Podcasters, do you want to expand your podcast reach to 360 million, maybe even more people? Do you want to make your podcast searchable on Google, Yahoo, even Ask Jeeves? Then look no further than Podcast Texts. You can increase your podcast reach exponentially. You can also reach the deaf and hearing impaired. They can read your podcast. It's unbelievable the amount of ways Podcast Text can help you. Maybe you have a few links you'd like to include. Not a problem. You can include them thanks to Podcast Texts. Seem too good to be true? Visit PodcastTexts.com to create a more dynamic user experience for your audience today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Behind the Barricade podcast, and here are your hosts, John O'Connor and Daniel Tao.
What's going on, everybody? This is John O'Connor Behind the Barricade, and I'm also joined with Daniel Tao, and we have reached episode number 69. Yeah, every frat boy is going, they said 69. Yeah, motherfucker, we're on episode number 69 right now. We are joined with Greg Bilderbeck. He is the guitarist of the band 627. They're out of Gig Harbor, Seattle, or Gig Harbor, Washington, rather. Seattle is not a state, and I am really stupid. They are out of Gig Harbor, Washington. And they're a great mix of Foo Fighters, Weezer. They have that traditional Seattle sound, but also they are heavy into alternative. You know, we talk about, you know, the Pixies. We talk about Dinosaur Jr. We've talked about, you know, hardcore punk, like stuff that influenced Greg. And it was a fun interview. Plus, we also talked about, you know, normal things such as, you know, the election. Thanks, Dan. And we also talked about dildos, because why not? Why not talk about big black dildos? Yes. But anyway, thank you guys so much for liking us on Facebook, following us on Twitter. You know the deal. We say this every single time, but we really, truly mean it. Thank you guys so much. We have so many awesome things that we are going to unveil in the upcoming months of Behind the Barricade. We have a new show with the Gig Gals. Every time I hear that title, I just think of like a 1920s announcer, the Gig Gals, or something like that. I mean, obviously, people can do 1920s accent better than I can. But anyways, doesn't deter the fact that these are two awesome girls over there in Europe. And yes, Daniel, they are girls. Ha ha, you dropped your phone. Nice going, stupid. Anyways, there are two girls that go to a shit ton of gigs over in Europe, and they like to bring out the local scene over there, so big props to that. We also have another show coming out in January, which I cannot talk about just yet, but it does feature a past BTB alum. I'm not saying who it is. You have 68 other episodes to figure it out, so it could be someone ginormous, or it could be a local band. I guess you're going to have to find out in January. But we have that. We are also doing something, both Dan and I, that we're going to be uncovering pretty soon, which is pretty cool, which I don't want to give away because that's how life works. You give away one secret before doing it, someone jumps on it already, even though a lot of people have jumped on this idea before. But anyways, thank you guys so much. And here it is, episode number 69. Yes, 69. Greg, with myself and Daniel Tao, writes... Now,
I got this feeling welling up deep inside me. It sticks around from the morning to night. The kind of feeling that I just shouldn't trust you. The kind of feeling something just isn't right. When you are young, they say wait till you are older. What could you learn if you don't pass any tests? It's hard to breathe with this weight on your shoulders. You can't inhale when it's crushing your chest.
I don't think he's my age, but he's probably in his 30s by now. But yeah,
actually, no,
27.
Yeah, no, he just said that. I'm like, fuck yeah, I remember them saying he's like 20.
27, huh?
He's actually younger than me. which is nice. All
right, well, then cut him some slack, okay? Yeah.
He's still in his frat boy college days.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's a little behind the curve, maybe. That's okay.
But then again, his whole job is to get hit in the head by other players.
I was just going to say that. Let's see how many headshots you take. And, you know, that bathroom humor becomes locker room humor. Becomes more funny, I guess.
Yeah. No, I mean, the funniest thing about that whole thing would be, like, if you could change your whole mindset with, like, every hit. Meaning, like, okay, he's doing, like, bathroom humor now. He gets hit again, he turns into, like, a classical composer. He gets hit again, he turns into, like, Shakespeare. Like, how fucking funny would that be?
And then one more time he's in silent movies, and after that he's done?
Yeah. Do they still have silent movies?
You know what? I don't know.
You would think hipsters would do it, like, ironically, right?
Probably not very popular anymore.
Yeah, I know that.
That would definitely be a niche market.
Yeah, I mean, like, pretentious douchebags that live in, like, fucking Brooklyn. Or in your case, Seattle.
Like,
yeah,
kind of like 627. See, self-deprecation is the way that you relieve stress, I think.
Absolutely.
Can't take yourself too seriously.
Well, Lord knows we don't take this show too seriously, so.
Right, we've talked about dildos and dildos.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
All within a matter of, what, 5 minutes now?
It's going by so fast.
We do not endorse these. We don't plan to cure any diseases.
Right.
I was just watching a video today. It's so funny how people, like, have to make that claim, like, this isn't meant to treat, diagnose, or cure any disease. And then they're like, you need to see your doctor first. And they're like, this will help with chronic fatigue. Like, if you're not trying to cure anything, why are you saying, like, this will help you?
Right.
Like, clearly you're trying to cure it. Yeah, exactly. I think it's hysterical, but you have to make that statement before you tell them this will cure chronic fatigue so you don't get sued.
Yeah. On that same label though, it'll say side effects include death. It's like, what? Yeah.
Side effects include 4 days straight of fatigue and bleeding from the asshole.
Anal bleeding, severe.
Right, yeah. So I'm going to be passed out and bleeding from the ass as opposed to being tired.
Exactly. So there's a 50% chance it will work, a 50% chance you're bleeding out your anus.
It'll exacerbate your conditions and add something else.
Something that you weren't affected with in the beginning.
Correct.
Now it's another problem. Now you have to take another medicine for your rectal bleeding, and then right. That probably has a side effect that screws up with, like, ears and, like, maybe your hearing goes in and out. Like, I mean, how right. fucked up is, like, the FDA and, like, the pharmaceutical companies that allow this right. shit to happen?
Right. And had I known that there was a medication where the list of side effects was becoming 70% deaf, I might have encouraged our drummer Dave Cook to look into a class action lawsuit, because most people don't know that our drummer is hearing impaired. Dave is 70% deaf.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, and he plays the drums in a rock band, so I'm sure we're not helping that situation out.
No.
So he's just like...
Brian Johnson.
Yeah, thank you. God damn it. Get out of my fucking head, Greg.
That's it. I was trying to be a champion for the disabled, and now we're making fun of Brian Johnson.
Well, look, we're allowed to make fun of him because apparently he's like one surgery away from getting his hearing back.
Right, which I'm not even sure if Dave is one surgery away from getting his hearing back. If he is, then please let's start a GoFundMe account in the name of 627, and I promise some minute portion of percentage of that will go to fixing Dave's hearing.
Exactly. You do not want to say the percentage, though.
Right. One day after my bills are paid.
Oh, I have $4 left over. Here are, Dave. Right.
We get him some earplugs.
Yeah.
Technically, we helped.
Yes. Technically, a portion did go to it.
That's right. No, recently we did, though. We invested in going to an in-ear monitor system. Because of that, it makes it, for one, it's a lot easier for him to hear, and two, he doesn't have to have a monitor at such a high volume right next to his ear.
Yeah. So, I mean, what was the cause of that? Was it like a rock band, or did he like work at like maybe like a mechanic shop or like somewhere like loud, or
was he born that way?
I don't know. I think it's hearing loss. I don't think he's always been, I think it's degraded over time, but I don't think it's from any one particular thing. I maybe it's perhaps genetic. I don't know. I never asked him that question before, but it certainly he wears hearing aids, and that is an issue even with the in-ears, deciding when or when not to wear them, or whether to go with one ear in and one ear out. It's a challenge, especially, you know, you play clubs where there isn't the capacity to hook up to our in-ear system. Or worse yet, there's not only no in-ear system, but there's also no drum monitor.
Oh, even better.
I mean, you know, that makes it particularly challenging. I mean, I'm sure he does a lot of counting back there.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're a drummer, Dan, like a whole totally different page from the rest of the band, like thinking like you're, I know some drummers make like the dumb noise, like faces and like they're like literally thinking in their heads, but like their face looks like they're about to sneeze. Dan, is there a technique that you usually do or no?
I don't know what you mean by
like counting in your head. You're like, okay, all right, four, like one.
Actually,
okay,
no,
two,
I
no?
do not count at all.
Really?
Dude, I don't. For actually, you know what? To be honest, this is probably horrible to admit, but I don't think I could.
Well, no. I see. I'm a drummer also, and I would say I don't necessarily count like one and two and three and four and.
That's actually like another. You know what people don't know is, it's like a drummer trying to sing and play. Like that's another limb that you have to practice, and I just never did that. So like it would be hard for me to play our songs and be like, oh, I counted eight. I can do it because in band
but
I did
do
like.
Do you not count like how many? Like okay, we're going into the chorus. The chorus is four of these, and then we go into the verse, and there's 16 of these.
Absolutely
like,
not. I memorize it.
Well, but by memorizing it, aren't you memorizing it by like, okay, we do this many times?
No, well, the only thing I do is like, oh, we repeat the main riff twice, something like that.
Right,
you
that's
know?
What I'm saying. Like, yeah. But see, like.
I just like don't do like eight bars of 12, you know, I don't do that.
Right, yeah, but I mean, if you were to lose track of how many times you had played something, then it would be critical at that point for you to hear someone else in the band, right? Like in most cases, it's the lyrics that would tell you, you know, if you hear the vocals, like, oh, okay, I lost track of how many times in a row that we've repeated this, but based on where he's at vocally, I know that there's two more lines left mm-hmm. and then we go into the chorus. Dave would not be able to hear that at all in most cases without the in-ears.
Yeah.
So he would be entirely lost.
I mean, yeah, you know, I kind of lied when I,
liar,
when I was learning, when I was learning, like taking lessons, it was learning, you know, other styles and whatnot. There's a book. I know his name is Tommy Igo, but it's like basically you learn like this certain style, like say a samba groove, and you have to play like to music. Mm-hmm. So it's basically like an open jam, but you have set. It's basically they kind of structure in a way that you have to play 16 bars. So obviously I'm like 1 2 3 4 2 2 3 4 3. You know, like I'm counting in my
right,
head. So
yeah,
yes, I
yeah,
can
yeah.
do it, but for some reason I totally have ADD, where like I'll be counting and then I'm like, oh crap, is this 12 or is it 16?
Yeah,
I can't keep the attention, and I don't want to that I forget, you know.
I hear you.
But at least when we play
do you listen to the vocals then intently, or do you
honestly it's just I just memorize like what my parts are, you know?
Right.
I just feel it. It's like learning, you know, I like music that much that when I memorize my band songs, it's like memorizing, you know, Breaking Benjamin or Disturbed. You know, if you wanted to go play a Disturbed song, you wouldn't know like, oh, they do it twice. You just, you know, from listening to the song that the verse is this long, or like when they end like this part, you know? So I basically do that.
Something I always did when I played too, I wonder if you do this then, is that I always played the fills exactly the same in the same order in the same spots. Like it was never improv when I did a fill, like it was the exact same fill that happened. You know, if it was the first chorus, first repeat at the end of that repeat, I would play that fill at that part in the song every time. and it wouldn't be the same fill that I played at other times in the song where that particular thing might occur, mm-hmm. but it was always in the same order. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Now, were you talking about not improvising? Were you talking about doing like cover songs?
No, I mean like on our songs in our band, like let's mm-hmm. say, you know, there's a fill at the end of say every two bars during the verse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the first verse, there are a particular set of fills that happen in the same order every two bars. That would be like the first, after two bars, it would be one fill. After four bars, it would be another particular fill. And then in the second verse, it would be two different fills. But every time I played the song, it would always be those fills in those places. I never mixed it up or played the fill that was at the end of the song. I never used that fill at the beginning of the song. Mm-hmm. I always did them specifically. Like, I actually wrote those fills and practiced them that way so that, yes, essentially, I never would count either because I would know if I'm doing this particular fill, this is the fill that goes right before the first chorus, or this is the fill that goes right into the second verse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really anal about that, especially when I do cover songs. When I watch people play like a Disturbed song or something like that, when I see them doing different fills and improvising, it's a huge pet peeve. Like I want to
see, and that's why I don't do cover yeah. songs because I don't like doing that. I don't like paying that close of attention.
Exactly,
to someone,
and you want to know what? And that's
someone else's idea.
Yeah, and that's why I don't try that hard for covers is because there's a lot of shit that you can't hear that they're doing. Like when you see a guy yeah. playing, you're like, he's doing ghost notes there. Like that does not sound like it's on a snare drum. So yeah. it's you really have to pay really close attention. But I'm like that with my songs, too. I mean, live, sometimes when the juices are flowing or if you're in practice.
Well, yeah, if you make
you
a mistake.
Different.
But generally yeah. speaking, I have that memorized. The
yeah.
order. I mean, down to every last, you know, whether I do a fill that's in 16th notes in one particular spot and only in quarter notes or eighth notes in another spot, I would repeat that exactly. thing, like I would try to replicate that every time I played the song.
Exactly, yeah, I definitely try to replicate it, and sometimes you play it a little differently, but I definitely try to do that same fill in the same spot. And there's some drummers, like I don't know if you've ever listened to the band Hailstorm, but he, like, you hear his record, you're like, oh, he's all right, and then you see him live, you're like, dude, this guy's freaking amazing, but he's not playing what's on the record. It's like way
yeah,
more technical,
right.
You know.
Right, well, I think that happens a lot too, because, you know, like you get a producer generally will push you to, I mean, I know even when we recorded with Jack and Dino, he was like, he asked me how many pieces were on the drum set. And he was like, all right, lose two toms and two cymbals, start practicing that way now. Mm-hmm. It'll make you tighter in the studio. Like, I mean, I really do kind of agree that for you know, a commercial studio recording, that stripping it back a bit is probably the way to go. Mm-hmm. And then I also believe that stepping it up live is the way to go.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
I mean, but when I like see playing the guitar, like this, it's sort of the same. Like you'll see us play live. I play the exact guitar solos from the record. I play live, not because I'm obsessed with playing it identical to the record, but it's because I kind of suck at playing the guitar. So when I write mm-hmm. a good lead like that, I play it that way all the time because I really can't take it anywhere else.
Well, I think if you can play guitar solos, I don't think you suck. Because, I mean, I don't suck at guitar either, but
you're just
I can't
not
play
good,
guitar. Dan. I can't play guitar solos.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I write them, you know. Like, yeah. I sit at the foot of my bed with my guitar writing them literally, like, sometimes, you know, two or three beats at a time. Like, I want to do something like this, and I'll sit there and practice that one thing until I can consistently do it and then add that to the other pieces, and then eventually, like, I've hacked out this whole thing that sounds like a really wild emotional solo. But, you know, I mean, behind the scenes, they're behind the barricades.
I knew that was coming.
There's a lot more going on to that, and I wish I could just pick up a guitar and like whip something like that out, and occasionally, you know, something kind of happens that way. But more often than not, if I go into an improv solo, I'm going to end up playing essentially the same thing all the time. And I don't want to do that. So I try to, like, actually, you know, really think about like the emotion of the song that I'm after, you know, and I grew up listening to like Jay Maskus from Dinosaur Jr. So I'm, it's not always about, you know, like hammer-ons and metal solos for me. I really like long emotional bends and, you know, I mean, just weird things that Jay Maskus would do. I try to like throw in there and that's sort of how I piecemeal that stuff together.
I mean, whatever works for you. I mean, some people want to be like Sinister Gates and play like these ridiculous solos, and other people are more like, I don't want to say more technical, but more, I don't know, more of like what, a refined solo where it's like you know exactly what notes are playing and you know where to bend and where to.
Well, like the guitar player for Disturbed, not so much now, but you know, in the, when they started doing solos, he's very lead. Like, I don't know if I'm quite describing it, you know, the way it should be, but it's like a lead. So it's basically like a separate riff in his guitar solo. He starts out with,
right.
You know?
It's
not like
he's
shredding and you can't play it. Yeah,
solo. It's a lead. I know what you're saying.
Yeah,
like,
and he ends
like,
them with it.
How to like even the Offspring maybe like where they don't have a guy that just goes wild technically, but occasionally he'll play a lead part that I guess would be the equivalent of what their solos would be.
Yeah. That's what I love. I was watching a thing on Chevelle. They posted something like, oh, we're doing a lot more solos on this record. And, you know, it's something we've never done before. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, oh, Chevelle, you know, they don't really play anything technical. And then I see this and then I listen to the record. I'm like, wow, wait, I didn't hear any guitar solo on this album. And then you go back and listen and the guitar solo was just like 30 second notes. And like maybe he ends with a little, you know, like triplet run, but that's it. Like that's their solo. Right. So I guess to each is their own.
Whatever
for that
works. Yeah.
Well, I recently I've noticed that the Foo Fighters, who traditionally would be a band that has occasionally some lead parts, but very rarely an actual solo. But I would say over the last 3 or 4 records, they've gone that way a lot more. And then, you know, especially as of late, some of those songs now they're really starting to have more metal-y or maybe classic rock style leads in their songs too. And actually they're really good though. They're not like crappy ones like you were talking about. They're like, apparently they've had the skill the whole time and they just have been hiding it from us.
Well, I think really, I don't know. How'd you feel about Sonic Highways?
Me?
Yeah.
Honestly, I thought it was badass. I mean, You know, like everything they do.
I liked a couple songs, but
really, I thought some of the songs that they did that didn't receive quite as much attention were some of the better songs on the record. And I thought for what it was that it could have turned out a lot less edgy than it did. And then especially when they followed it up with Saint Cecilia, which has some really edgy songs on it too. Like, I keep thinking that because of their age and because of their propensity to write acoustic songs and shit with piano in it, like, I keep thinking, you know, the next record they put out is just totally going to suck and I'm going to be disappointed. And every time they put out a record, it's like, I take it home and I listen to it. And at first I'm like, I don't really know. And then like a week and a half later, I'm obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. So
that's how it always is for albums.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, I can't say that I session all the songs on that record as much as I do Saint Cecilia, because I think Saint Cecilia is a little bit better, but for what they did with Sonic Highways, it's still very Foo Fighters. It still totally fucking rocks. It's still, I don't know, man. I mean, I just think he does shit the right way for a band that's making a killing commercially.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But I mean,
he still does shit the right way.
Yeah, the one thing I just didn't like was that was his, what's that Radiohead album? OK Computer, where they started going like in a weird-ass direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, now OK Computer is one of my favorite Radiohead albums.
It's either you love it or you hate it. That's basically what it comes down to for OK Computer. Like, it, I mean, most people actually love it. I really dislike it, but it's just
that's
you know,
crazy. That's my favorite.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it was like the Foo Fighters version of that. Like, I like the whole backstory and the whole HBO show where they go into different cities and like get different influences, and then it shows on the record. Like that, I actually enjoyed, but it was just like a whole mess. Like, it nothing really like came together, and I know that wasn't the purpose. But like every other Foo Fighters album, it all comes wrapped around. Like it's a whole circle, and this one is basically going in 5,000 directions.
Right, and that's why I said with the caveat that for what it was, it's still pretty Foo Fighters. I mean, they didn't do a country song when they were in Nashville, and they didn't do a grunge song when they were in Seattle. I mean, the songs are still Foo Fighters songs. It would have been worse had they tried to do, you know, a soul song in
Detroit
or something in Detroit, you know. I mean, like, think about what a mess that would have been.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So for what they tried to do, I think it turned out about as cool as it could have. Mm-hmm. I mean, you either like the idea or you don't, but I mean, honestly, I think if they had done it, I think most people that don't like it because they didn't do a country song in Nashville and a soul song in Detroit. But as a Foo Fighters fan, I'm so fucking glad they did not do that.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I only liked probably like three. What was there like eight tracks? Yeah. I think out of all of them, it was only three of them I liked.
Did you like the Holy Diver intro track?
Yeah, that one was. Yeah, it sounded exactly.
I've heard a lot of people bitch about that. Yeah.
See, you want to know what's the problem? I hear that in the beginning, but I like the song so much that I look past sounding like Holy Diver. But Outside, I love that song.
Outside is a great song, and I think my favorite track on that record is Congregation.
Mm-hmm. Like I feel with Outside, it's a guilty pleasure, because when I hear bands repeating the same riff, like that's the main part of the song, is just an easy, you know, like that's so simple and so boring and monotone. Yet in that song, I fucking love it. So I feel, to me, that song's a guilty pleasure. But still, outside of that, it is a great song and it's catchy as hell. But and you know, going back to what we were talking about, guitar solos, like how they picked that guy to do the guitar solo in that song. And it's just so weird because it's not something I normally listen to. It's very open. You know, how he'll do like a bend and then stop for like 5 seconds and then maybe do another one with a little, you know, fill.
Right.
And then leave a little bit more space. So I'm not like used to that, especially listening to metal
song
and stuff.
Really, that song has a really like Husker Du feel to me, like old, early alt-punk transition from like classic rock into the like early alt punk. I mean, it does. Like, I grew up listening to like Husker Du and, you know, the Pixies, and there's something about the way that song feels that reminds me of like that genre of music that I discovered as a kid.
Yeah, it's great. Like some of the stuff that Pixies do, it was like fucking magical at the time. Like, no one else was doing it. And worked out very well.
Yeah. The Pixies are an awesome band. Actually, it's weird to me that they play the size venues that they play now, because the first time I saw the Pixies, they were playing at the Tacoma Dome and they opened for U2.
Jesus Christ, what a show.
And so, yeah, right. And well, actually, U2 I thought was horrible and the Pixies stole the show. But at any rate, it's weird because now the Pixies are like, you know, playing clubs again. And I don't know.
But they're a club band. They're not like an arena rock band. That's the thing.
Right. I know. It's just weird to me. Like what that must be like, having honestly never done that.
Yeah.
To have that experience and then go back to playing clubs. Like, what that must feel like. I don't know. I'm just curious.
Well, I mean,
I would like to know.
Yeah. Well, let's call them up. Let's see if they're available. And when we do the interview, we'll have you on. How's that sound?
Yeah, that would be cool. Those guys are probably really cool.
Yeah. Hey, who knows? Did you listen to the latest album yet or no?
I actually have only heard one track off of the album, and that's the one
single
that they play on the college radio. But
yeah, what was that name? It was like a weird-ass track.
Yeah,
right?
I don't even know.
Yeah.
But, like, I know, like, Dinosaur Jr.'s record was doing really well on college radio, but I never heard it once on the local alternative commercial radio
station. No, you won't.
Right. And that's a band I absolutely love. I grew up on that band for sure, too. Like, I feel like those guys, and even, like, when Sebado broke off and became a thing, like, some of that music was the kind of thing, again, that reminds me of that song Outside from the Foo Fighters, like that sort of period of like people recording stuff on 4 tracks and 8 tracks at home, but really, really well.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's an odd time in music. It seems like a lot of, like, if you don't delve too into it, you think, okay, everyone's doing the same exact thing over and over again, because that's what rock radio is wanting you to believe. Rock radio wants you to believe, like, Disturbed and Five Finger Death Punch and Shinedown all sound the same exact thing, give or take, you know, a couple notes here and there. But, like, when you, like, dive deeper into, like, a lot of, like, independent music, and you're like, holy shit, a revolution's fucking happening. And I think that's what happened with the new Avenged Sevenfold album. Did you hear the backstory on that?
No, I didn't. Enlighten me.
Oh, I will. So they were talking with Chris Jericho of Fozzy, and also the famous WWE wrestler. And they were like, okay, you know what? We have this album out. We haven't said anything. We released one single. We're not too sure what to do, but we want to kind of make this a surprise. People are asking us about it. They know something's ready, but I don't know what to do. So Chris goes, okay, I'm going to make a fake Instagram post, and in it, I'm going to take the Death Bat, the Avenged Sevenfold logo, and I'm going to put it up, like, basically onto a building or something like that, like Photoshopped. And in the hashtag, he put down Voltaic Oceans. So immediately people think, okay, this is fucking weird. The brilliant part about what Chris did was he immediately took it down. So it got people going, oh, wait a second, this was a mistake? Oh, shit. New Avenged Sevenfold album is called Voltaic Oceans. Yeah, yeah, blah. And like every single website, like music website, and I was even fucking guilty of posting this too. We all thought it was Voltaic Oceans. Until I think when did it come out? I think it was like last Wednesday when it came out. Last Tuesday they had an announcement, like a little preview announcement. Earlier in the day, apparently some kid went into the back of like a Best Buy, found the actual physical album and went, what is this? And uploaded it. So it kind of leaked a little bit, but literally like 2 hours beforehand, before the announcement, which was fucking brilliant on their part.
Yeah, because I was kind of surprised. I didn't hear a lot of, you know, commotion about the album. Well, that was just like, oh, the new album's out a week or two after they just released their single. I'm like, what? That is not normal practice.
Yeah, but like they wanted to do like the Kanye West route. They wanted to do like the Beyonce route. But the problem is, you know, they even said this on Talk is Jericho. They even said that, you know, rock fans want something physical. So I don't think it would have been that well received if it was just a digital only. And that's why they actually sent boxes of records to like record stores, to like Best Buy, to FYE, stuff like that, just for them to put out on, I guess, last Wednesday when it came out, or whenever the fuck it came out. But like to have it as a secret for that long, especially in the rock community, that's fucking brilliant on their parts.
Yeah, how did they do that? Nobody, how did that not leak?
No one knows.
Yeah, especially since the album released and some kid found it in Best Buy randomly.
Yeah, it was like one of the workers that found it in like the back. I guess he was like opening up boxes to put it out, and he just went, oh my God, what the fuck is this? And I remember seeing like the Instagram post of the kid holding up the album. I'm like, no, what the fuck is that? Is it like the stage? I was like, okay, that was the single that they put out. They actually named the album after that. I was like, okay, maybe they have a CD version of the single. I literally thought nothing of it. And then he took, I think, another picture of like the back where it had like, I don't know, like 10 or 11 tracks, how many, whatever is on the album. And I was like, oh my God, there's something with this. And
so Voltaic Oceans was nothing?
Voltaic Oceans was nothing. It was something Chris Jericho created to throw us all off.
Weird.
But wasn't there more posts? Like, I could have sworn I saw a bunch with the Death Bat. Like, it was on a football stadium. And then it was here. And then it was there.
Yeah, that was just to market, I think, the new single. Like, that happened, like, a month or two ago.
So it happened after that whole Jericho thing?
No. The Jericho thing happened after that. Because the Jericho thing, I think, happened in, I don't know, maybe late September. And, like, you saw all those, like, deathbed things, like, in London and, like, Tokyo and, like, all around. I think that was, like, maybe late summer, like, early September. So, like, people, they were getting the, I guess, the awareness up that a new record is coming, but they didn't want to say anything about it. And then what Jericho did was fucking brilliant.
Is he part of their team?
I don't think he is. I know he's good friends with M Shadows and what the fuck? What was the guitar? Sinister Gates. He's good friends with those guys. Like, they've been on his podcast a few times. And then, you know, I guess they were talking about the new album, which was sent to Jericho. And he's like, holy shit, this is not like any other Avenged Sevenfold album I've heard. And listening to it, like, it's a fucking, it's brilliant. I mean, it's like 9 or 10 tracks, whatever it is. But, you know, it clocks in at like an hour 13.
I've yet to listen
to it. So they're long tracks.
Oh, yeah. My God, yes.
They used to have long ones like Sidewinder.
Yeah, I mean, they
were
like. Which
is an amazing song.
Yeah, I think they mentioned that was like, what, 11 minutes or something like that? Mm. And that was the second longest. And they have one on this album, which was 15 minutes.
Whoa.
So it's like Dream Theater.
Yeah, that's what they were going for. Dream Theater, Rush. They were doing like a little prog rock thing.
But oh, God, please don't tell me they were trying to do something like their last album.
No. This is not like...
Because he's like, oh, I want to do a song that sounds like Led Zeppelin. You know, that's what they wanted with their previous record.
No, this one was basically, okay, balls to the wall. We're fucking bored of this. Let's do something completely out of the ordinary.
So is it anything like their single? Because I dislike that song.
Isn't that the place where everybody wants to get to, though, is the place where they could release an album full of songs where they totally did it for themselves?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And they have the commercial clout that it won't be a commercial flop because their fans appreciate when they make real music from the heart. I mean, that's where we're all trying to get to.
Well, I really think they did that with their, like all bands, I really think they did that with their previous stuff. You know, the stuff that everyone loves now and then hates their newer stuff, I think.
Well, like City of Evil, there's.
Well, even before that, I think not the self-titled, which is the one with
Waking the Fallen?
Waking the Fallen. I think that was like, well, that was even more commercial. Sounding the Seventh Trumpet, I think that was their.
Well, that was like their first album where they had no idea what the fuck they were doing.
Yeah, but
like,
I think like that was actually their, what they wanted to do. And I think Waking the Fallen, they were like, oh, you guys got something here, but maybe tone down this and do that. I think that's when they.
And then City of Evil came out, and that was a fucking monster album.
Dude, I love that album, but I don't know about you guys, but going back to it, I listened to his vocals, and I'm like, man, they're kind of terrible in certain parts. Like, just his, like, like, I don't know, the way he says like, dude, he used to, on Waking the Falling, it was great. And then I don't know if it had to do with him getting throat surgery or whatever that was, but once City of Evil came out, his voice just like, oh.
He couldn't scream anymore.
Yeah, and it sounded, when he was singing, it sounded like he didn't mean to, but it was kind of like whiny.
Yeah.
Nasally or something.
Yeah, you know, like when they say E's and stuff, like, I don't know. I just, going back to it, I'm like, I love that album back in the day, but nowadays, like, when I listen to it, I'm like, it kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth when I hear his vocals in certain spots, but still doesn't detract. It's an amazing album.
Yeah.
What's another album you loved as a kid and then listen to now and wonder, why did
Shania
I like
Twain.
This What?
Shania Twain, Destiny's Child. I could go on.
I don't know. That's a great question.
Like, yeah, I know. I'm trying to think of what I mean, I listened to some butt rock as a really little kid. But
I hate that term. Fuck that shit.
I don't even know what the hell that is.
Like Quiet Riot.
Shit rock? Is that what you're talking about?
No. Like Puddle of Mud, that little... like Hinder. With the lips of an angel.
Hey, I like that stuff.
Yes, well.
Puddle of Mud, not so much anymore, but back in the day.
Dude, I actually just saw a video. They played a local venue by us called Stanhope House, which there's no stage. It's basically you're playing at a bar. Mm-hmm. And apparently on the video, Wes, their lead singer, who's completely out of his fucking mind, was either high as fuck or drunk as fuck. Some whatever guy that was filming the video, like, Wes started like slapping a camera out of phone out of his hand, like literally just being a total asshole. But like, He started like they were doing, I think, the song Psycho, and it's like Psycho's a straightforward song, like nothing too crazy. And like the chorus goes, maybe I'm the one, maybe I'm the one who is a schizophrenic psycho. He's like, maybe I'm the one, maybe I'm the one, maybe I'm the one. Like, he's like, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
I've heard a lot of stories about that guy live. Man.
And they're all true.
Like, yeah, right. Acting like a douche.
Now, I think my favorite was I have quite a few favorites. I think best offstage moment was him getting so drunk he rode the baggage claim area in the airport.
And he got arrested.
He got arrested for that. And I think my best, my favorite onstage moment from him was like he was in the middle of doing the song. He stopped doing the song, pointed at some guy in the crowd, and goes, "You stole my fucking house, man! Fuck you! You stole my fucking house!"
Wow.
Yeah, look it up. There's fucking videos.
I've seen a few other videos of stupid shit that he's done on stage. Like, dude, play the fucking show. If there's not a fight going on in the crowd that you need to break up, then shut the fuck up and do the show.
Oh my God.
I don't want to hear your political views. I don't want to hear
unless you're a political band. Like, yeah, if I'm going to see Rage Against the Machine, yeah, and if I don't hear anything about like anti-Trump or anti-Hillary, I'd be kind of pissed. But
right, although I think, you know, for me, I personally tend to shy away from music that's super overtly political, although we do have a song where I make a few references to some political beliefs I might have, but I think, for one, I don't like to polarize myself from any particular audience member too much.
Because you have to go all in with this shit. You can't just be like, I like some of these tactics that Donald's saying, but Hillary has some okay shit over here. It's like, no, it's either all or nothing, motherfucker.
Right. So I think, and for one, I mean, I haven't seen anything from anybody that's compelling me to make a decision one way or the other at this point. So.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Daniel, however,
I'm all on one side.
This is a really, really, really difficult situation to be in general. And yeah, I don't hold anyone, you know, I mean, obviously we have accountability for what we do or we don't do, but I don't blame anybody for struggling to make a decision one way or the other, because for me, I have a hard time balancing the scales of well, that would suck if.
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
It's literally the lesser of two evils is what we're dealing with, because there's no, I mean, yes, there's third parties, there's Libertarian, there's Green Party, there's, you know, 5,000 other parties. But, you know, America, where you have the choice of anything, we're basically catered to only two people, either a Republican or a Democrat. So the whole system's fucked.
And I honestly can't tell you that I feel more strongly in a negative way about one than I do the other.
Yeah.
So, like, I know everyone's argument, like, well, if you don't do this, then that will happen.
Well, yeah, like, well, but this could also happen.
Right. Like, I mean, it's like, well, yeah, well, honestly, I live in Washington. It's a blue state, if you don't know that.
Yeah, same as New Jersey. Yep.
Right, okay. And it's on the West Coast. So, generally speaking, the elections are all but decided by the time Washington's two electoral votes that are going blue are cast. So, you know, doing something to the contrary of the blue, or even casting a vote in favor of blue at that point, I mean, none of it really is of great consequence at that point. I mean, unfortunately, with the way that the system works, and I just, you know, like, I don't know how I sleep at night after having cast a vote for any of them.
Yeah, really. That's why I don't vote. Fuck it.
Right.
Vote, John, and you motherfucker.
Like, vote or die.
See, and that's a whole nother argument, too. Like, you know, I read a Mike Rowe thing, and I don't always love Mike Rowe necessarily, but I thought it was kind of a cool...
Yeah, I saw that same exact thing you were about to explain.
A point of view I had never, ever, ever once considered, that this whole, you know, everyone needs to urge everyone else to exercise their right to vote. And his argument was, well, we all have a right to bear arms at the moment. And, you know, it's not necessarily a call to action for everyone who has that right to go out and get one. Like, especially if you don't know anything about handling one, it's probably better if you don't, maybe. I mean, that's a personal decision.
Yeah.
Sort of like exercising your right to vote, and which is used effectively by some people who are educated and probably less effectively by those who are not, but it's a right that everyone has. But for me to just blanketly encourage everyone, you should just go out and do this because it's your right. Well, we all have, there's a right to free speech, but if you don't have anything to say, you know, you can also exercise your right not to speak at all. You have the right to plead the fifth too.
Yeah.
You cannot speak. I mean, there's a time and a place for both, I guess. And I'm waiting to be compelled in one direction or another, and I'm not so sure that the day will come and go without that happening.
Yeah, I mean, I understand his argument about the whole entire thing, but if we're going to go with the gun situation, this is basically what voting is like. Voting is like, okay, you have a gun, and an intruder comes into your house, and, you know, like, you have four people living with you who all think, okay, let's shoot this person. Now you have to give your gun to someone else who might not agree with you, but they will go and either shoot you or not. And it's basically up to them. That's what's happening with, like, the voting system. You know, it gets transferred off into, like, one or two people who vote via state. So they get, like, what the state wants, and also it's personal opinion of what they want in the end. So basically you're voting one way to get to convince someone to vote that way. So your vote basically means nothing.
As the system is structured, yes. That essentially we're trying to convince our representatives to vote the way that the majority of their constituents would have them vote.
Exactly. So if it's like 100% Republican, and, you know, New Jersey being a blue state has a Democratic representative, he'll go, okay, fuck that. We're going to go Democrat. It's like, you don't fucking win. Your vote is fucking nothing.
Well, that's also my point. Like, that arguing that somehow the consequences of me not voting are worse than the consequences of me voting for someone whose ideals don't at all match my belief system in order to avoid getting someone else's ideologies that don't match mine. It's like, well, I don't like any of their ideas. I guess telling somebody that they somehow have done a disservice to the public by not voting is kind of a stupid argument.
Yeah.
Because the consequences of me not voting are completely irrelevant. I would argue that the consequences of me voting are completely irrelevant, unfortunately.
Yeah. And honestly, I think I've pieced it all together. And I'll knock on wood or whatever substance we have here. Here's some wood. Hold on. There you go. I'll knock on wood. I have never been selected for jury duty, and I believe that ties in to not voting.
Oh, well, I don't know. I've both voted and not voted over the years, depending on the election.
So, you've never, ever voted?
I voted once.
Yeah, same here.
When I was 18.
Same here.
And I haven't voted in what's going to be 10 more years.
That's me, too, and I got jury duty twice.
Really?
Yeah, I've had jury duty three times also, and I've probably 50-50 voted and not voted since I've been 18.
Shit. Huh. Okay, so that theory is fucking shot. I guess I'm just one of the lucky ones. If you know someone's going to hear this and be like, yep.
I voted in every election that Ron Paul ran in.
Oh, see, now I agree with you there. I would vote with Ron Paul in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I think the hardest pill for me to swallow about this whole thing is that it was just 4 years ago that people were telling me that the Republican Party could not nominate Ron Paul because his views were just too extreme. Yeah. And now
we have
the
Donald
Republican
Trump.
Party has nominated 50 Shades of Orange, and and his plan to build a wall is huge.
It's huge, all right? It's huge.
It's huge. And somehow this is not too extreme, but yet Ron Paul saying, yeah, you know what? I think maybe we should just let people do what they want, kind of, unless they're fucking with other people. What do you think about that? And everybody was like, oh my God, that's so extreme. You mean people can have sex and do drugs behind closed doors, and as long as they're not robbing, stealing, or hurting anyone else, that would be legal? And he said, yeah. And they were like, what, are you fucking crazy? Let's lock up all the Mexicans and build a fucking wall and put checkpoints in.
Woo! That's not, make America great again, bro.
Crazy. Like, I don't know, man. I don't get how just 4 years ago that was too extreme, and 4 years later the world is so upset at the system that we're going to nominate essentially fucking the Camacho dude from Idiocracy.
Well, that's what happens when you have someone like that with a voice like that to ramp up people.
What's unfortunate is that Ron Paul was made to look more like the guy from Idiocracy than the media is making Trump look like now.
Mm-hmm. So basically, if Ron Paul had the voice and the personality like Donald Trump, he'd be president.
I don't know. I guess not the voice in terms of the sound. I mean the voice in terms of the money, that the resources,
the power, yeah,
to get media attention, to garner cameras in his face. I mean, because one of the largest problems that Ron Paul ever had running in both as a libertarian and as a Republican was being included in the debates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, how does anyone know if his ideas are extreme? We never get to talk about it. And then conversely, we tune into debates that are between two people who don't say fuck all about anything political. It's just like, oh, he's a racist and she wants to go to war and she steals and he lies and rapes. And it's like none of this shit is proven about anybody. Can we talk about what your voting records are? What do you fucking believe? How is you being in office going to impact me? That's what I want to fucking
exactly
know.
That's why I hate the people that are that this is. I mean, dude, I'm going to be honest. I'm 100% voting for Trump, but I'm voting for different reasons that the people are not voting for Trump, unlike you. These people that are voting for Hillary because of the way he talks about women, it's like you're 100% looking past all his good qualities for like one or two things. And it,
right,
everyone
has to do that in order to support any of those candidates.
Exactly.
That's the problem I have with them bashing on the supporters of the other people is like, look, you obviously have to overlook a massive amount of corruption to put your faith in. I mean, the whole thing is just so fucking broken.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we are as a country. And
But that's why people are voting for Trump. I agree that people are finally so fed up that with how things are going that they're willing to do almost anything to shake up the system. And I just don't understand why they couldn't have taken advantage of the opportunity to do that with somebody who is actually smart enough to do it effectively when they had the opportunity with Ron Paul.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it because he actually knew what he was doing, and it was fucking scary because when he talked about cinching up the economy the way that it needs to, it means sort of like drinking. When you're an alcoholic, the only thing that's really going to make you feel better long-term is to stop drinking.
Exactly,
you're not going to
get
healthy until you stop. But immediately upon stopping, the only thing that's going to make you feel better in the short term is another fucking drink.
Yeah. It's,
spending money is the same way. So as a country, no one wants to swallow the bitter pill that, dude, the only way we get out of this mess is probably 10 or 12 years of some rough shit. Mm-hmm. And everything we do to put a Band-Aid on it between now and then is just like having another drink, which means that when we finally do take the bottle out of our hands, the shakes are going to be that much more severe. They're going to last that much longer because the only way to really get over it is to get it out of your system.
It's like a football team.
You have to change the behavior.
Yeah. Like you can't, you know, I find this, dude, this is my the Jets, my favorite team in a, like,
LOL.
To a T. You know, it's like, well, and this is how it's in New York too. And now it's like this with the Yankees. It's, oh, you know, we're in New York in the media spotlight. We can't deal with three bad years. So we go out and get the Brandon Marshalls and the, I forget, what was his name? Derek Mason, some old wide receiver from Baltimore. Like, they keep
You're
getting...
You're absolutely right.
Like, dude, you need to spend 3 years of being a horrible team
rebuilding,
getting the draft picks and not going out and get guys that are going to be getting you to the first round of the playoffs, and then in 3 years you're going to be completely terrible.
Right. I mean, the perfect parallel to that would be when the Sonics were here shortly before leaving to Oklahoma City, and they were really, really bad because they wanted to move the team. But one of the side effects of doing that, of being really, really bad, was getting early round draft picks, which ultimately led to them getting Kevin Durant, mm-hmm. which unfortunately never played out here in Seattle the way we wanted to. But they became a championship competitor because they went long enough, sucking enough here that yes, effectively, you're right, that they built enough of the young players to grow together. And instead of going and getting the Seattle Mariners of 2001, let's get a bunch of mediocre, washed up has-beens. That was the worst thing that ever happened to the Mariners.
I mean, dude, it's a perfect example of last year with the Jets. Like, they actually had a GM that came in and did the same thing. So they're horrible. And then last year they stepped it up and they were good. You know, it's like, that was a perfect example of, you need to stop getting these people like Brandon Marshall and get a draft pick.
Right. Build, because
they could be like Russell Wilson, and your team could be that much amazing the next year.
Right. Which was essentially the difference, was that was one or two really, really good young players that were cheap. But see, the Mariners did the opposite. They got a bunch of washed up players, but they didn't spend a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And they won a bunch of games that one year. And then the ownership was like, holy crap, we can spend that little, not get a star player, and we can win games. Well, they never won games with that strategy again, but people kept coming to the stadium, so they kept doing it.
Yeah. And then Moneyball happened.
Yeah.
Right.
With the sabermetrics and the whole Oakland Athletics thing. Like, they went on, what was it, like a 32-game winning streak or something like that?
Right.
But, I mean, it's all about, you know, what's good at the time. I mean, like, there's a healthy medium between, you know, getting a lot of star players that are going to be good for the short term, and then doing what the Philadelphia 76ers GM did before he got fired, which was tank for six straight seasons, get like six straight number one picks.
Right.
And now they're going to be somewhat decent.
But it's professional sports. You can't just, you're like a rookie. You know, he plays good one year and then he's not good the next. Well, because he was good the first year because it's professional sports and you're new. And then the next year they do their research. And if you're not able to combat their plan against you, then you're terrible, you know. So that's the thing. It's professional sports. That's how it works. It's the people that can overcome that and change their game, and that proves, like Tom Brady, they're really that good. Or there's people like Sanchez where it looks like they're going to be something decent, right, and they turn out like shit because they're just not able to overcome, you know,
right,
other
to
people
study the game and make the on the fly adjustments you need to make,
like the other team did for you, and that's why they're able to combat you. Like, happens with pitchers all the time. You see in the and hitters, you know, they come out and they hit like 20 home runs, and then they figure you out and you're not able to combat it.
Right. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because a guy like Tom Brady or a guy like Russell Wilson that was sort of a mid-level or lower, in Tom Brady's case, way lower level draft pick.
Seventh round, yeah.
You know? Yeah, I mean, like, there's not a mountain of film on a guy like that coming in. He didn't probably play right away. He sat behind Bledsoe for a while, right? I mean,
yeah, and then Bledsoe got hurt and he got his shot.
Right, but he was, that whole time, he was studying the game and learning what he could learn. And meanwhile, everyone was studying Bledsoe and not him. But like you said, now he started. People could have caught on and figured him out. He had to keep that fire in his belly to keep going into the film room and making adjustments on the fly. And I was just listening to the radio today, and I heard people talking about, you know, quarterbacks that have that leadership ability. I think they were talking about Jay Cutler, and they were like, you know, there's a lot of quarterbacks that are blessed with the physical attributes, a great arm or whatever. But a guy like Jeff George had a great arm, but he was a shitty leader.
Yeah.
Same with Jay Cutler. Like, they had struggled to succeed, as where a guy like Tom Brady, he didn't have the, you know, he wasn't a high round draft pick because he didn't possess that rocket arm that sets you apart from everyone else, because the competition is so even at that level. But what he possessed was the shit that you couldn't see, was that fire to keep making adjustments, keep studying, keep learning the game. And those are the things that make you a leader.
Yeah. But like you said, he does, like, you know how it is, you know, there's some players that go out, like Des Bryant or whatever. I mean, he's born with, like, that natural gift. He can, you know, maybe go out and, like, have fun and party. But someone like Tom Brady, he went from, I've never personally looked at it, but supposedly if you look at his – the way he looked like when he went into – I don't know. I think when you go in the combine or whatever, you get like weighed and you I don't know, whatever, you know, kind of like in wrestling where you get weighed or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
But like when you look at him, you're like, dude, what the hell? He's like a twig and he's like scrawny or whatever. And now it's just – he was so he's so crazy with like his regimen and the way – like the leadership. He's doing like what he would do with his men with himself. And he turned himself into that, you know. It's
right.
Like I said, it's either going to clubs and partying and going along with your gift and thinking it's just going to get you through, or it's I have this gift and I can really propel myself to a next level. It's
right. And imagine if somebody like Dez Bryant had that kind of work ethic. Yeah. I mean, that's
other than the injuries.
Well, yeah, but
sometimes
you
can't take away that. But I hear you.
But a lot of times that's the problem, is that people that are blessed on that level with that kind of talent, they struggle to have the work ethic because it's hard to motivate yourself to put in that kind of work when stuff comes naturally to you. Yeah. I think one of the benefits that I have in my life is I used to look at it as like a detractor, like, why am I not, you know, an amazing drummer or an amazing guitarist? Why do I have to play five instruments sort of good instead of one instrument better than anyone I know?
Yeah.
But it's like, well, because I was made to achieve my success in a different way, and I was going to need all of these little skills here and there, both, you know, all the years I spent sitting in an office, you know, making business deals and doing construction and different things that I did for work. All of those little skills, you know, they went into a box, and I wasn't the best at that compared to other people at my work, maybe necessarily. And I'm not the greatest guitarist compared to other bands, but one thing I am is a combination of all of the things necessary to run this little show. And I'm thankful for that, because there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Crazy. Well, speaking of guitar, we did ask our Facebook friends if they had any questions, if they would like to ask you. And a Buster Weldon wants us to ask you about your pedal board.
Yeah, my pedal board is a little extreme. I have spent some time and some engineering resources into building an 8-way pedal changer, and I am not smart enough to do the MIDI thing, so it's solid state pedal switching. So I have something like, I don't know, 10 or 12 pedals, and they will be on in some 8 different arrangements of combination. But basically the pedals are on all the time, and the pedal switcher just chooses which combinations I'm using in my signal flow. And it puts on a pretty cool light show, and some of the pedals are sort of unusual. I have a Digitech Whammy that you might recognize as sounding similar to, you know, Queens of the Stone Age or Muse, and then I have a G-Quencer, which does some automatic timing and switching of that Whammy, and so that's pretty cool. And I even have my own pedal that was made for me by Loud Button Electronics. It's called a What the Fuck, only they made a special one for me that's purple. So they called it, since my nickname is Ill Funk, they called it What the Funk. And so I got my own special little one-off version of that that's on my pedal board that makes some pretty cool sounds that I use for our Fascination Street cover. And then I even have a Snazzy Effects Mini Arc and a Rainbow Machine that I use to make some video game sounds.
Jesus.
Awesome. Yeah, I love pedals. I'm a geek.
Yeah. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. As long as you're putting out quality music, it doesn't matter if you have fucking 50 pedals and you're just half of you is like jumping on, like, you know, like Tom Hanks and Big on the big ass big ass piano.
Yeah. I think I'm like kind of obsessed with making digital sounds out of analog equipment.
Oh, you're one of those. Okay.
So it isn't that I'm a tech geek, because I'm actually kind of the opposite. The way that I control everything is, like I said, solid state and kind of clunky. But I like using those old school components to make very modern digital sort of synth, or maybe like sounds you might only hear from samples you're hearing from my guitar and my pedals.
Yeah. Which is pretty damn cool if you think about it. Like, you're the type of person that, what's a good comparison for this one? It's like, you know, you like to take the road less traveled. You like to go all the way around to like a certain destination when you have like one straight shot to it.
Taking the long cut instead of the shortcut.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, if it works, fuck it. Why not?
Well, some of the time it works and some of the time it doesn't.
It's trial and error, and that's with everything.
The more pedals you throw in, then the more likely you are to have problems live. So there has been plenty of moments live where technical difficulties have prevented me from putting on or creating the kinds of sounds live that I had intended to. That does happen from time to time because it can be a little finicky, and I'm learning how to cut those parts of the circuit out or make them more reliable.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yep. All right.
If it were up to Jack and Dino, I would use nothing but a rat distortion pedal and a chorus.
Of course, yes.
But it's not up to Jack and Dino, so.
No. They're not paying you for doing all of this.
That's right. In fact, I was paying him.
Yes, you were. A handsome amount, probably.
He's a fair guy.
Yes, as we talked about in the first interview that no one's going to hear. Which sucks,
right?
Because like I know all this information and I'm like, I really don't want to ask you about this because it's the same shit I've heard, but like I keep forgetting that we're doing a podcast for people who haven't heard this shit.
Right.
It's like having a conversation with someone. It's like, okay, can you repeat everything you just mentioned right now again? It's like,
yeah, I don't want to do that.
No, I don't blame you there. But anyways, we were going to repeat something which is somewhat explained the first time. I don't even really remember this one. But Shemi Xender X, I don't fucking know, wants to know if you're single.
If I'm single. I am single, yes. I am divorced. I've been single for almost 2 years now. I do very little dating. I'm a single dad. I have my 15-year-old daughter at home. She plays sports, and she's in high school. And I work full time, so I don't have a lot of time. And I'm in a band that I'm obsessed with.
Are you? You're in a band? Wow, I had no idea.
I'm kind of obsessed with my band, like most dudes are with their girlfriends. So it's kind of difficult to find time to do it. I have dated on and off, but it, you know, I'm really particular about adding ingredients to our soup. My daughter and I are in a good groove, and we like how things work in our home, and I'm a little hesitant to just start throwing other stuff in the mix and seeing what happens. So, you know, there's that, and I'm super picky, so there's also that, and so is my daughter. So sometimes I might see a girl and I'll be like, oh, she's really cute. My daughter will be like, no.
Dad, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Right. So, and oftentimes she sees a girl, what about her? And I'm like, yeah, honey, girls like that don't talk to me. it's hard to find people.
I'm way underqualified for that.
But honey, this is Kate Upton. She won't give me the time of day.
Right. Well, she's on TV, honey. It's not likely that I'll even get a hold of her. But I do have a little bit of a local celebrity crush. But other than that, I think I kind of like doing what I want to do when I want to do it more than I like making the adjustments necessary to have companionship, at least for the moment.
There you go, Shemi. Hopefully you heard that, and he just wants to fuck and leave. You fuck, you get the hell out. There's no cuddling. There's no cuddling whatsoever, all right?
That's right. No cuddling. Get out.
All right. And she also asked a follow-up question because one's not enough for Shemi. How many siblings are in the current lineup, which we also discussed last time, but might as well go back into it.
Actually, there are currently three of us in the lineup. You may only see one builder back, depending on who's in town at the time. We have, you know, one of us lives in Bellingham, one of us lives in Austin, Texas, and I live in Gig Harbor, Washington, which is about 4 hours south of Bellingham. So a lot of times, those of us that live in Gig Harbor, which is myself, Mike, and Dave, we will do things as a three-piece because it's convenient. And it still sounds okay, but when we are playing, you know, like on the record, there are three builder backs. There's my older brother, Jason, builder back, who we call Jay Danger. He plays guitar. That's my older brother. And then there's myself, Ill Funk, Greg Bilderback, and then my youngest brother, Matt, who we call the Machine. And he's picked up the keyboards for us and sang backups on the record.
Oh, yeah. So take that, Chevelle.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. Take that, Hanson.
Yeah. Fuck you, Hanson.
We're going to bop our way to the fucking top, okay?
Top of the charts, motherfuckers.
That's right.
All right. And
very, very slowly.
Yeah, seriously.
Very, very slowly.
Snail's pace, motherfucker.
That's right. I don't want to get tired and shit.
All right. So apparently you only have two fans, according to our Facebook poll. Yeah. Buster Weldon also.
And I know both of them.
So Buster asks, how important is skateboarding to some or all members of the group? And we've discussed this already, but whatever. Just fucking repeat your answers.
Right, yeah. Skateboarding is my number one non-musical hobby. I absolutely love skateboarding. Skated since I was a little kid. And I have had sponsorships at times, although now it's kind of difficult to maintain a sponsorship because you have to be making videos and stuff all the time, and I don't even have time for a girlfriend. So, but yeah, I mean, I love to go skate. I think that's the number one way that I keep in shape. I'm not much of a gym guy. I don't like to run unless somebody's chasing me with a weapon. So yeah, I love
hopefully
skate,
that doesn't happen
though.
Often.
Right. Hopefully not.
Hey, the mean streets of Gig Harbor over here.
That's right. Yes. Thug life. So, yeah, no, I mean, I skate a lot. There's good parks and stuff. Although unfortunately I live in Washington where it rains a massive percentage of the time. And there is a serious lack of indoor skate locations around here. One time I had a ramp in my garage, but my garage is too full of stuff at the moment for that to exist.
How dare you be an adult?
Yeah, right. It sucks. So, yeah, but I mean, so myself and Dave Cook both skate a lot. And if you follow us on Facebook or Twitter, you'll see lots of skate related content on both of our pages at 627 SIXTWOSEVEN, followed by 627, the numbers. So,
spelled out first and then 627.
Yeah, but if you like skateboarding, it's a good place to go because I am constantly posting stuff from a variety of other skate locations, plus little videos of us here and there or anyone else that sends me cool skate stuff to post. I'll post. So, yeah, I love skateboarding. It's my life.
Now, all you need to do is find a way to have a music video where the entire band is on skateboards playing their instruments.
Ooh, I haven't talked about doing it while playing instruments, but we've definitely talked about doing the Dinosaur Jr. route and both mixing in footage of us playing and footage of us skating for sure. That has crossed our minds. But one issue we're having is we're not very good at skateboarding. So we're good, but we're not good like skate video good. So, I mean, coming up with enough footage to fill that much time takes some effort and some free time that we haven't yet located, but I mean, it's an idea we're kicking around.
There you go. Or what's that move called where you're skating normally and then you push down in your back foot and you ride the back like the little like a wheelie type of
manual
thing?
Manual.
Why don't you just do that while playing like a solo? How fucking badass would that be?
Yeah, I can barely manual anyway. I'm thinking, like, if I could, I'm just wondering if I could even just hold the guitar and do it. I wouldn't want to do it with my guitar.
Well, yeah, that's also true.
I don't really want that skateboard flying out from underneath me and hitting the ground with my guitar that hard.
Or you could just do like a mockery of it and take like a Guitar Hero guitar.
I was thinking maybe we just need to go animated with the whole thing.
You could do that too. So you don't even have to relearn how to skateboard and play guitar at the same time.
Right. Exactly. And I'd be good at both.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? You'd be able to do a handstand while playing the guitar with your other hand. Or you play with your feet. Who gives a fuck? It's your animation. Right. Do whatever you want.
Right. Way more effective.
Exactly. There we go. See? The ideas are flowing.
Right. Thank you, Buster. I'll buy you a beer when I go see Buster's band play, which is Stop, Don't Stop, the greatest punk band in Tacoma.
There we go. And that was his final question was, what are some of your local favorite bands or favorite local bands?
My local favorite bands. The best punk rock band in all of Tacoma is most definitely Buster Weldon's Stop, Don't Stop. That band kicks ass. If you like, grew up listening to, say, stuff like the Descendants or, you know, Black Flag, or, I mean, if you grew up listening to good old fashioned Dead Kennedys type punk rock and roll, you'll love Stop, Don't Stop.
The Jello stuff, not the new stuff.
Right. Yeah. Right. And, so yeah, you'll dig them. I'm really into a band from Portland called The Welkin Dim. That's a fantastic band. They have a new record coming out here in a couple weeks that I strongly suggest checking out. They have a video that came out recently called Writing in Color. That's fantastic. You should look it up on YouTube. That's a really good band that you're going to see a lot of stuff from over the coming months. And then another really great band that I don't know if they're really local. They're from Eugene, or, well, actually they're from Minnesota originally, but they're out of Eugene now, and they do a lot of touring and they play a lot of live shows. It's a two-piece post-hardcore sort of metal band called Amelia, and these ladies, I'm telling you, they rock so fucking hard. You've never heard a two-piece like that. We actually are going to be playing with Amelia here coming up on the 3rd of December in Portland at the Analog, and then we're playing with them on the 16th of December in Seattle at the Funhouse. And this band is, I mean, they're a load. It's heavy for just two girls, a guitar and the drums. I mean, they just rip.
There we go. That, I might actually just check them out now. Thanks for that recommendation.
You absolutely should. They have a video also out, and it's, oh gosh, what's the name of the video now? I'm spacing.
Pressure's on.
Yeah, and just look them up. Amelia out of Eugene, Oregon. They're on Facebook at Amelia Music.
There we go. I'll actually look that up right now since we're not doing anything else except for talking.
Right. And I'm telling you, their drummer Tess hits so hard. It's like Dave Grohl died and was reincarnated as a pretty girl that rips.
So I think the video you're talking about is The Truth Is.
Yes. Thank you.
Yep.
The Truth Is. Yes. It's a fantastic video. It's really exciting, and it definitely sums up what it's like to see them live. It's like being the guy in the video. I'll say that.
All right. I think I have to check this out because I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah, that's the idea. That's what I'm trying to do. See?
There you go.
See what I did there?
No, I see exactly what you did there. You're leading people on. You give them like a nice little headline. Be like, you know, local band says shit about Behind the Barricade, and people are not going to click that link because no one has any idea who the hell Behind the Barricade is.
But they will.
Oh yeah! Oh yes! Yeah, yes!
Amen.
I will do my best to set you up with all of those bands so you can have them on your show.
That works for
us. Sounds good to me.
Fuck yeah! Hell yeah! And that concludes our fan question segment, even though it was just two people. But thank you to those two people.
The life of 627, two people.
The emphasis on the two.
Yeah.
All right, Greg, I think we've covered, Jesus Christ, I think almost everything. I mean, we...
Politics, dildos, football.
Yeah, what else could there be?
Yeah, yes. Really.
We've done a good job, boys.
Yeah. Awesome. Great.
I think we've just recorded enough information to raise children in an hour and 17 minutes.
Yeah. I believe so.
This is your handbook. And they said that it doesn't come with a manual.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah, that's right. And that's how Behind the Barricades became famous.
Yes. Hey, I mean, people get famous for weirder shit, so.
Right, that's right.
I mean, Ken Bone got famous for just wearing a red sweater.
Right, like I was just saying to you today, we just signed some sync licenses to have our music used on television. And
there
I
we
never
go,
imagined.
Thank you. This is why I tell you to bring that shit up.
And I was like, you know, I never imagined that myself to be a television jingle writer, but... you know, when you're in a world that's self-financed and is very expensive and difficult to navigate in, you know, things like sync licenses and a few minutes here or there going in or out of a commercial could be a couple hundred bucks a month that you can use to pay for advertising or whatever. I mean, it's just another revenue stream that you can capitalize on. And you never imagined it happening.
Exactly. Until now.
Right. Now I'm going to be on Discovery Channel. Oprah Winfrey Network. Are you kidding me?
You're on the OWN Network?
Yeah.
Now you've made it.
Channel. We got maybe Rob Dyrdek's, not the Fantasy
Ridiculousness.
Factory. Ridiculousness. Yeah. Nitro Circus and NASCAR. Yeah. So we might get a little NASCAR action. That'd be pretty cool.
Nice.
There you go. So now you're going to have pretentious kids and rednecks show up on your next shows.
That's right. And that's great because mostly the only thing we get with our drink tickets are Pabst Blue Ribbons. So yeah,
PBRs.
I'm sure you know the plight.
Yes.
That's how a musician like us gets paid.
Yeah, there's no top shelf shit.
In advertising and gear, and you get two free Pabst Blue Ribbons.
If you're It's usually one for every hour you play, but wow, if you're getting two, you got a great fucking deal.
For every hour you play? I've never played for an hour.
Oh shit. Wow, really good deal.
You guys
You get a half a beer.
You get a shot of a beer.
Yeah, if they did it that way, I would just get to smell somebody's beer.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
for
I think
my
like,
30 minutes on stage.
I think like some cover bands actually get paid like that. Like I know like
Oh yeah, they do.
Yeah. So it's like, an hour you get one free beer, go. So
cover bands make real money, though.
Depending how good you are, because there are a lot of shit cover bands.
Right. Well, they make a lot more money than most of your average bands playing originals, at least until those originals become songs worth covering.
Exactly. And then you put those covers up on YouTube, and you'll be famous.
Right.
Because that's
and
how
then someone
works.
Will be paying you television royalties. Bam!
Uh-huh.
That's how you go full circle.
This is how the music business works.
Yes.
And then someone fucks you in the ass with a dildo. There we go. Now we're full circle in this
and
whole entire
song. And throws it on the field.
Yes. There we go, Greg. All right, let's go down with the plugs. You're on Facebook. You're on Twitter. You could pick up the new EP that we didn't even talk about, Some Other's Day, on Bandcamp, on iTunes.
CD Baby, Amazon.
Basically, wherever there's music being sold, pick that shit up.
And thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it. Thanks for doing it again.
Of course. No problem. I mean, what else are we doing on Tuesday night?
That's right. Talking to me. Lucky you. I'll make sure you get to talk to some more of my friends here real soon, too. And thanks again.
Oh, hell yeah. We'll definitely be in touch.
All right. Take care.
All right, Greg. Later, man.